best way to make a man talk is to make him comfortable. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast, where we're all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and I am joined by
Brendan Fitzpatrick.
All right, and last week, we discussed Spartacus by Stanley Kubrick. I almost said Alfred Kubrick. Alfred Kubrick. He's combining the best directors. Oh, my God. I'm knocking over my water bottle. Yeah, things are...
Oh, my Lord. What a mess. Yeah. Zach, get it together, pilgrim.
Seriously, dude. This week, due to a Woody Strode connection, we will be discussing the man who shot Liberty Valance. Then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on connections sent in from the listeners and ones that we brought as your hosts. We will be spoiling The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. That title is quite the mouthful.
We're going to tell you exactly who shot Liberty Valance.
Yes, right, yeah, we will. So if you do not want to know those spoilers, and you don't, I knew nothing about this movie going in, and I'm very glad I knew nothing.
You neither.
Go ahead and pause this podcast. Go watch it. It's on Amazon Prime, I believe, on Hulu also.
Yep,
but
I watched it on Hulu. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I always choose Amazon Prime. When I have the option, I like the Amazon X-ray feature where Fair you can enough, pause yeah. it and it tells you who's on screen and some facts and things like that. So
yeah, I like using Hulu because I like to feel like I'm getting my money's worth out of the Hulu Plus account.
Okay.
Because yes. I don't feel like I use it enough. So it's, you know.
I don't know if it's true, but I feel like the picture quality on Amazon is a little bit better than Hulu, but I don't know.
Could be.
Might be my head. So, yeah. But you have your options. You can choose Amazon, or you can choose Hulu, or you can rent it. You can get it from your library. Any of those ways to watch this movie. So pause, go watch it, and then come back and listen. Or if you want to skip ahead to our ladder discussion for next week, we'll put that timestamp in the description, as always. So you can do that. But you should pause. Go find out who shot Liberty Valance, and then come back.
Yep.
All right. And as always, you can submit your feedback, ratings, questions, comments to @LadderMovie on Twitter, themovieladder@gmail.com, and make sure you follow us on Letterboxd, The Movie Ladder. We post each week's episode to the ladder. We have it as a list in there. We also have a watch list, which will have every movie that has been brought up on this podcast as a suggestion. So if you're looking for something to watch, check out that watch list. So, all right, Brendan. Well, dude. All right, yeah, what would you prefer? Would you prefer to be called Dude or Pilgrim?
I think I prefer Dude. I grew up in the Dude era when everybody was getting called Dude. And I'm also a big Rio Bravo fan, and I like Dean Martin in that movie. So he's called Dude by John Wayne, so I think I'd prefer to be called Dude.
Yeah, I definitely am. I'm definitely more of a Dude. Although Pilgrim, I feel like, gets people's attention. Like if I saw a friend and I was like, hey, dude, how's it going? You know, you wouldn't really bat an eye. But if I showed up to somebody's house and I was like, hey, Pilgrim, how you doing? They'd be like, what? Is it Thanksgiving? What are you doing?
Right. Yeah. Well, funnily enough, the Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is the first use of John Wayne using his signature term of calling someone Pilgrim. So
that is interesting because I've watched a lot of Westerns over the last couple weeks, and mm-hmm. I've been listening to a lot of like the Unspooled podcasts, and they make reference to the Pilgrim thing. And yeah. I think it was like the Rio Bravo episode or the Searchers episode where they're talking about that. And I was like, did I miss something? He didn't call anybody Pilgrim.
No, he doesn't. And it's so connected to John Wayne and his full of bravado, swaggering sheriff archetype that it just gets imprinted onto every character that he has that, oh, he must have called everybody Pilgrim in this movie. And he actually doubles down on the nicknames. It calls, you know, calls back to Rio Bravo. It calls him both Dude, Jimmy Stewart's character, both Dude and Pilgrim in this movie. So
interesting.
Dude is a derogatory term, actually.
Yeah, I did read that. Yeah. You know, the 90s took that term back, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, the 90s definitely brought Dude back. But
I remember Hey Dude was a popular show I used to like a lot. And then just, you know, Michelangelo, the Ninja Turtle, brought back Dude as well.
Definitely did, yeah. Cowabunga.
And then Hurley on Lost.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude. And Sawyer on Lost is kind of like John Wayne himself with all the nicknames.
Good point. Yeah, he really is. He really is, yeah.
So, all right, well, dude, before we get into Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, which I feel like with the title of this movie, at first I kept thinking it was just called Who Shot Liberty Valance, and I was like, oh, that's like a mystery, but it's not. Yeah. It's the man who shot Liberty Valance.
I've just been calling it Liberty Valance in my notes and through the build-up to this podcast just to give it a little shorthand, because it really is a mouthful, but, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm in the same boat. What is the best thing you watched this week?
What is the best thing I watched this week? All right, well, speaking of legends like John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart, I watched the 1976 movie Network, which is all about... Yeah, it's incredible. I had never seen it before. It's all about a legendary TV broadcast journalist who kind of has a mental breakdown, and I know I'm sure everybody has seen the famous TV or movie clip where he's, you know, stands in front of the screen and goes, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. That comes from Network. And I always thought going into this that this was the climax of the movie. Actually, that moment happens like really early on in the movie, and I was shocked. There's a lot more movie to it than just the I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And I don't want to spoil anything because I actually really enjoyed this movie. I thought all the performances were great. Robert Duvall is fantastic. Bill Holden, Faye Dunaway, the actor who plays, what is his name now? See, I watched it last night and I've already lost it.
That's a lot of names on the last couple of
it really, really is. But yeah, Peter Finch plays Howard, the lead TV anchor at the fifth most popular TV network, and he suffers sort of a mental breakdown when they decide that because they're in fifth place, they're going to fire him, and it all sort of goes downhill from there with him and his character. It's a really incredible movie that is still as relevant now as it was, you know, 40 years ago when it was made.
And that's actually what I wrote down. I just pulled up my review of it.
Yeah,
I watched it almost exactly a year ago. I watched it on March 17th last year.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I watched it in 2019, 2 years ago. And my comment was this movie made in 1976 or 2016?
Exactly. Like, it's incredibly relevant. I loved it. It's definitely, you know, going to be one of my best movies of the year that I watched, I think, on my personal ladder. Yeah, highly recommend it if nobody's ever seen it. It's shocking that it took me this long to see it, but yeah, definitely recommend Network. I also watched Rosemary's Baby for the first time this week, which was really incredible, really intense. I had never seen that before either. I'll say as little as I can about the director.
Yeah, it's on my watch list. So.
But it's a very very good movie. Highly recommend. It's classic for a reason. Just don't get too hung up on the whole horrible director and his bullshit.
It's Roman Polanski.
Polanski, yes.
I think we talked a lot about Roman Polanski a year ago.
We did talk a good bit about Polanski with our Once Upon a Time in Hollywood discussions.
Once Upon a Host.
Those are my two favorite things I watched this week. What about you?
So let's see. Well, it's interesting you talked about a movie with Faye Dunaway and a Beatty in it. Mm-hmm. Because you watched that last night?
Yeah.
Correct? So last night I watched a movie with Faye Dunaway and a member of the Beatty family in it. It was not Network. I watched Bonnie and Clyde last night.
Nice.
And
I love Bonnie and Clyde.
That's not the best thing I watched this week, but I thought it was, I'm definitely glad that I saw it. I was reading up a little bit about the historical context and the, just the amount of violence that was in it. That was, just so like, revolutionary for the time that just in 1967, you didn't see violence like that. And there is a very bloody shootout in that movie, the kind of famous one. But I love the look. I mean, it's just such a classic, that the 1930s look. I mean, we could have gone off of Dick Tracy so easily to Bonnie and Clyde. Sure. I don't know if it was suggested last year when we did Dick Tracy, but there are so many connections between Dick Tracy and Bonnie and Clyde. But the costumes, especially the way Bonnie dresses throughout the movie, and just the way it captures like Depression era. I really liked that. I thought that the story was like kind of hit and miss on how engaged I was in the movie, but I like the look of it. I did that as a double feature when I watched that and Liberty Valance last night.
Nice.
But I guess the best thing I watched actually connects pretty well to Liberty Valance, and that is Stagecoach. Yeah. So I hadn't seen Stagecoach since I was in high school, since I took history of film in high school. Stagecoach, another one that could be a great connection off of Liberty Valance. And if it's what we decide to go with, then, you know, I'll watch it again for the second time in a couple weeks. But a lot of cast connections. It's also John Ford as well. John Ford, John Wayne.
It's the first Ford Wayne collaboration.
Yeah, right? And it actually was really interesting one to watch right before watching Liberty Valance, because it's, you know, 20 plus years before this movie. And I think Liberty Valance deals a lot with aging, looking back to the past. And so having just watched Stagecoach and then just a day or two later watching Liberty Valance, all of the actors who were in both movies, John Wayne and Annie Devine, for example, and John Carradine also is in both. But Annie Devine especially, I was like, oh my God, he's aged a lot. Because – and we're just going to – I think I just kind of want to take this right into the Liberty Valance discussion, because there's not really a way to talk about it without – but at the beginning of Liberty Valance, we're seeing obviously many years into the future. And I didn't realize, I didn't know anything about Liberty Valance going into it. And so when I saw Annie Devine, I was like, wow, he has aged a ton. Now, I didn't realize they kind of aged them up for the bookend portion of the movie.
Right.
But it definitely made that opening scene of Liberty Valance, where we're seeing the characters come back to the town, to come back to Shinbone, that it just made it so much more contemplative, where it really made me feel like these were people returning to a place and looking back on their life. And it made that bookend part hit even harder for me, because I just saw so many of these actors in a movie that literally was 20 years before, 20 plus
years. Where they were definitely playing the actual ages that they were, instead of having to be aged down.
Yeah, and I know that's a criticism I've seen from some people, that it was distracting. I didn't even really think about. And I didn't know. I had no idea going into this movie what we were going to be seeing. So I did not know that. I thought we were staying in that time for the whole movie. Right. I didn't know we were going to go back and the whole story was going to be told as a flashback.
I did not either.
From Rance. Which, you know, we'll get into the names in this movie, but Rance and Liberty, quite the name choices for this movie. But yeah, just to close the book on Stagecoach, if you haven't seen it, I would definitely recommend it. It's, you know, very kind of high concept, where it's a story about a whole bunch of people in a stagecoach traveling and trying to beat the clock, because they're being chased by the very simplistic depiction of Native Americans, which happens a lot in these Westerns. But there's a very exciting climactic scene towards the end that, especially considering it was made in 1939, I cannot believe that, like, the action, how action packed it was. It felt like something I was watching now. And there's a character who is in the movie, and he is talking about how the country needs a businessman for a president. We need America for Americans, lower taxes. And I was just like, oh my God, what year was this made in again? So Stagecoach is my best movie I watched this week.
Nice. Good. Well, that leads us right into, I think, would you say it holds up in comparison to looking at a young John Wayne in Stagecoach, and then looking at John Wayne being as old as he was in 1962 and still trying to play that same age he was in Stagecoach in the flashback? Like, well, did it bother you? Did it take you out?
No, because I don't feel like they ever really said how old he was supposed to be in the flashbacks in Liberty Valance.
Right.
I think I think Rance is a little bit more like trying to play younger, but James Stewart, Jimmy Stewart, I know he's listed as James Stewart here. I still call him Jimmy Stewart. He has that youthful energy. I mean, that's the same energy he brings to It's a Wonderful Life.
Right. He's got that boyish charm.
Right.
Yeah.
This isn't like watching Robert De Niro in The Irishman, where he can't move around and he's playing younger. Like, he's, you know, his hair's a little gray, but like lots of people's hair goes gray when they're young. I thought he was really effective playing really old, and I think they did age him up a little bit when he's in the older timeline.
For sure.
And I actually went back after I finished this movie. I went back and I watched the first 15 minutes again, And okay. I thought that you catch a ton in this movie watching that first segment again, because you're watching that you don't know everything right. they're referencing. There's a lot of mystery set up during that and a lot of references to things and, you know, just little lines, especially when they're talking about the paper and when they're referencing Tom and the cactus blossom, all of these right. things, you don't quite understand the significance of them. And so if you only watch this once, I would recommend just pop it back on. Watch that first 15 minutes again, because there are a whole bunch of things you'll pick up the second time.
Nice.
You don't have to watch the whole movie again. Although I do think this movie, I actually do think this movie would play really well on a rewatch. But I know it's, you know, not everybody has 2 hours to devote right. to rewatching a movie they watched, but watch 15 minutes.
Yeah. So. Well, just to give a little context about how old our two leads are in the main portion of this film. So John Wayne was 55 years old in 1962 when this movie
came
out.
The actor? The actor?
John Wayne, the actor. Yeah. John Wayne, the actor.
Ronald Reagan, the actor?
Yes, exactly. And Jimmy Stewart is actually a year younger. So he is only 54 when this movie came out. So they're both, I want to say, in the flashback, probably trying to play to their early 30s. To be generous to John Wayne, he's probably trying to play in his late 30s, early 40s. That character is definitely older than Rats Stoddard is.
Right. Because he's kind of a, throughout this movie, I feel like he's sort of a mentor to him. So I look at him as being older, and we don't see John Wayne. We don't see Tom in the main timeline because he's in the casket. So we never actually see him. I mean, honestly, I don't think for me, the age would be anywhere on like the top 10 things I would even talk about with this movie. I mean, it's a small nitpick, but it really wasn't noticeable for me.
Yeah, it didn't bother me too much either, just because, like, a lot of times in Old West films, people look older than their age anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they're outside. Their skin is going to get leather. They're living a rough life.
It didn't bother me too much.
No, what I really like about this movie is that I was thinking about it today, and it's kind of an onion. I mean, the whole movie is like, you have that outer layer, which is that book ending with the first 15 minutes and the last 10-15 minutes, where we're seeing, you know, 20 years into the future probably. Mm-hmm. And the town has been revitalized, the train comes through, there's way more stores, it's prosperous, that area, because of the statehood, because of the things that Rance fought for the town and for the state, how much change and progress has come, and how he's reflecting back on his life, because he is the celebrity. He is the man who shot Liberty Valance. Except
it doesn't matter who you really are, because people just want to believe in who they think you are.
Right. And having to live with that. The idea of the legend stuff, which the newspaper guys talk about it towards the end, I thought that was interesting, but I was so much more interested in Rance has been living with his secret for 20 plus years. He has had success in his life to the point where he might be running for vice president because of something he didn't do. Had Tom not been there to save him, Rance would have been killed. And Rance would have died that night because of Liberty killing him. And so he owes not only his literal life, but his success, his livelihood, to this man, Tom, who, for what we see, was left behind. And
I think there's a lot of guilt that comes from that, which you can really feel in Jimmy Stewart's performance, especially, like you said, once you realize what the ending is, you can sort of, even if you don't actually go back and rewatch the first 20 minutes or so, you can really, like, think about it and feel that in the performance in those first 15 minutes. Once you realize what the ending is, you realize why Jimmy Stewart is so, like, drawn, why his face is so long, why he feels like he has this weight on him.
Yes.
And it's because he's been carrying this, and he's been carrying the guilt of Tom doing this amazing thing for him, and then also having to leave Tom and the town behind for all this time. And now he instead feels like he can retire and come home now that Tom is dead.
And there's a certain amount of guilt
that comes with that too, because he wouldn't want to come home and come back there and stay there when Tom was still alive because he wouldn't want anybody to bring up the story and it accidentally come out that Tom did it, you know?
I don't know if that's I don't think that's why he wouldn't come back. I think it's more that he had so much shame about it that he didn't want to come back because he didn't want to have to face it. And so now that Tom is dead and he doesn't have to face Tom and he has that closure, I think now is when he's finally ready to come back.
For sure.
And, you know, I do think that is part of why he's able to finally on the train express to Hallie that he's ready to come back, and she like immediately is like, "Yes, I want to come back." Like she
has been, I think she's missed it too. Like,
right,
I mean,
she's like a bottle of champagne that's been shaken up so much, and she's ready to go back home. And finally, when he pops the cork, it's like, "Yes, good." And then we get that great line, which is just one of the great ending lines to a movie that really kind of like it. I remember last year on the podcast, Av talked about how a lot of times with movies, you can learn from the very first line of the movie what the whole movie is about.
Yeah.
And I think this is the opposite, where it's not until the last line of the movie that it really clicks in place and you're like, oh, that's what we've been watching. Because the last line of the movie is the train conductor or the you know train attendant who says, nothing is too good for the man who shot Liberty Valance. And then you just see that that look on James Stewart's face drop down, and you can just see that look alone just conveys 20 years of shame and guilt for the life that he's led that is based off of this lie. And the man who shot Liberty Valance is not James Stewart. It's not Rance. The man who shot Liberty Valance is Tom.
It's Tom. So, it's John Wayne.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that subversion of expectations because there are a couple of reasons. Like, there's a couple of things that this movie does to subvert Western tropes that I really, really loved. Mm-hmm. Like, first off, John Wayne's character is a, like, hardcore, even though he's technically a good guy, he's still a, kind of an asshole. Like, he's a
especially,
roguish.
Well, he's, I think he puts on, I mean, I think he loves Hallie
he's the Han
so
Solo.
Much.
He's the Han Solo to, you know, to Jimmy Stewart's Vance's Luke Skywalker. You know, he's the roguish, you don't know what you're doing in this town, you're going to get yourself killed, I have to take care of you, kid, guy. And he, you know, that's not the type of role that you're used to John Wayne playing. John Wayne is usually the noble, heroic, stomps around through town with the star pinned to his chest sheriff.
Except in The Searchers.
Always in the right, you know. And, well, this is what I was about to say, is that it's only in the last couple of years around this movie and afterwards that he starts to get away from that trope and starts to play more roguish, skirting the edge of the law, tough guys, rather than the anti-heroes, rather than the, you know, boots and straps and, you know, stark into his chest, sheriff of the town. And I think that's really impressive and something that I think was a conscious choice as he got older, that it made more sense for him to sort of make that pivot. And I also, but on the opposite side of that, I really like the subversion that the, you know, the sheriff in this movie is a fall down, hapless, oafish Andy Devine, who is freaking fantastic.
It was so great to watch Andy Devine twice in 1 week because he I thought was the most funny part of Stagecoach. And he brings that same kind of doofusy energy to this movie just as a little bit older. And so it does feel like you're almost watching. I mean, this movie does kind of feel like it could be a sequel to Stagecoach, where it's all of these characters from the end of Stagecoach have gotten to this town. And I mean, I think there are some not so subtle allusions to the movie Stagecoach, given that when Rance starts telling his story, he literally brushes off a stagecoach. And it was like, oh, like right when I said that, I was like, I wrote down like very early on, I was like, oh, Stagecoach. Like, and that is another John Ford, John Wayne, Andy Devine, John Carradine. There might be a couple other connections to Stagecoach.
And this was also, you know, this was also John Ford sort of sending off his own black and white movie career and paying homage to Stagecoach himself before he, I mean, this was the last black and white movie he ever made. So it was sort of his own tip of the cap to his own legacy.
Yeah, I want to come back to the black and white, but one thing I do want to touch on as we're talking, and we haven't even gotten to the performance of Lee Marvin, which we definitely need to.
Yeah.
But the I do feel like this movie is, you know, John Ford, John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, all men at the back nine of their career. And this, especially the way this movie is framed, this movie is about looking back on your life and being contemplative. And, you know, a lot of times movies are described as like a meditation, and I kind of roll my eyes at that, but I do feel like this movie is a meditation about aging and getting 100%. Looking back on where your life was and where you ended up. And, you know, you can even say the same thing too with Pompey, the Woody Strode character, and Hallie, and all of these characters, we're checking back in with them 20 plus years later, and, you know, they are at a certain point in their life as a result of the actions that are told in the story that that Rance tells during the movie.
Yeah, so. For sure. I mean, it's all very it's all very self-referential and cyclical, and sort of everybody's paying homage to everything else, both inside and outside
some,
the movie.
Yeah, it's, definitely some meta in this.
Yeah.
So coming back to the black and white, which you just brought up, and I do think, you know, that will connect when we get to connections. I think that black and white is a very good connection to the first movie we did this year, which is Young Frankenstein.
Absolutely.
This movie was made in 1962. There was no reason for this movie to be made in black and white.
Yeah, and that's actually a lot of the research I did was about why they made this movie in black and white. And there are three conflicting stories about why they made this movie in black and white. So the first is that John Ford claimed that he did it to increase the tension of the film and give it his classic Western feel. I can see that.
Yeah.
But that seems also a little self-congratulatory.
But this movie is, I mean, if you look at this movie through the lens of John Ford looking back through his career, John Wayne looking back through his career, Jimmy Stewart, like all men who starred in these black and white movies.
They started in black and white. Yeah, it would make sense to have this movie in black and white. And that's ironically another reason that it possibly was made in black and white was to help hide the ages of some of the main characters, including John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart. And to help sort of de-age them, because it's a lot easier to hide age in black and white than it is in color.
That's true, because you can't see the hair color as much. You're not going to see how gray some of the characters are.
Right.
I can't think that is the main reason for it. It might have been like an additional benefit. I mean, the black and white, is there another reason that you saw for black and white?
There is one final reason, and that is that, well, the studio's own story is that it was a budgetary reason, because Paramount was bleeding money from all of those,
I'm just giving a thumbs down to that, because I don't buy that for a second.
Yeah, Paramount was bleeding, well, this is a podcast, no one can see your thumbs down, but Paramount at the time was bleeding money from all of these epic films that were being made between 1959 and 1964, including the one that we just covered last week, Spartacus.
That was Paramount as well? That was
Paramount. So they were bleeding money. There was a lot of money going around. And so it was a lot cheaper for them to shoot in a movie like this in black and white.
Okay. So, maybe. I think you have like two of the biggest movie stars of the time in this movie. So I don't think you're too worried about money at this point. I mean, maybe, I guess in 1962, it might have been a lot cheaper to do black and white than color. I think that it adds just to the flashback nature and the reflective nature of this movie.
I think it definitely helps with that.
I also think artistically, it looks awesome. There are some shots, especially when Peabody is killed and when the first time when I thought Peabody was going to get killed, where he blows out the candle, and it is like heightened. I mean, it's not how it would look when you blow out a candle, that like the entire room would invert from, you know, white coming through with the black background to black coming through with the white background. But I just was like, oh, that's great. And I was totally expecting, because then you're just seeing his shadow on the wall. I was expecting to see him get killed, and you just see the shadow of him get killed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, talk about subverting expectations. It then when he comes back and he lights the candle and all of Liberty's gang is in the office for the newspaper.
Yeah.
That was like sort of what I was expecting to happen earlier, just happened later. All that is accomplished because of the black and white. If this is in color, you
for
wouldn't
sure.
That
you
effect.
Can't do that. You can't do that as well in color, for sure.
And the shadows come through in the black and white. I mean, there's so many times where I was just watching the shadow and it's, you know, the big cowboy hat and the silhouette of the head as a shadow on the wall too. So
for sure. I mean,
that's really well affected too.
Yeah, you get a lot of great uses of the cowboy in profile shadow in this movie, whether it's with Liberty or with John Wayne, or even against the row of houses with Vance, or not Vance,
Rance.
Rance. Yeah, sorry, Rance and Vance. It's with Ransom. Yes. And so, I mean, it's, they each sort of have that moment. And I really love that this movie goes out of its way to showcase the, talents of each of its three leads in different ways by playing on their own past work and some of their future work that they don't, you know, that they're going to go on to make, but especially Liberty Vance was, you know, just coming off of, Lee Marvin was just coming off of his big breakout role where he plays a huge son of a bitch. And in the Comanche with John Wayne, and John Wayne actually recommended Lee Marvin to John Ford for this role.
Yeah.
So
one thing with the color that I think could have been really interesting, or with the black and white, what would you think if the framing was done in color and the flashback was so almost like a Wizard of Oz type effect, like a reverse Wizard of Oz?
I think that would have helped with the, I think actually the only person that probably helps is the age disparity and aging down for Jimmy Stewart.
Right.
I think it's,
well, he's the main one that you spend the time with. I mean, I don't think you see a huge difference in how Hallie looks.
No, Vera Miles looks fantastic in all timelines.
Both. Yeah. I do think the way that Andy Devine looks, he looks much older in the current timeline.
Absolutely. And so does,
And Pompey has the hair, so Pompey, like he has like the white hair. But yeah, I do think that Rance looks, even in the black and white, looks much older, I think. Mm-hmm. Even if he looks older than he's supposed to be in the flashback, in the main timeline, he does look like an older man at the end of his career.
For sure, for sure. Oh. And I mean, Jimmy Stewart's going to go on to play, you know, old man leading the charge of an entire family or clan of people and sort of the retired general type, you know, for the next 10, 12, 15 years of his career before he retires, you know, so both he and Wayne sort of, this is their last gasp at doing a younger role before they sort of both give in to their ages and start playing older characters.
Which is why it's so perfect with like that theme of this movie. Is what, and that was something that I picked up on it early, but it really was not until that last line of the movie that it all kind of crystallized for me. And as I was watching this, I was like, I really like it. I'm really engaged with it, but I feel like I'm like, where was Tom during the shootout? He's just missing. Like there were these open
because
questions
that
I had.
You know, Pompey goes to get him.
Right.
But you never see him. And it's like,
Yeah, I was like, where is he? And then what happened to Tom? Like, I had all these questions about Tom. And I was, before the last 10 minutes of the movie, I was kind of like, or last probably last 20 minutes of the movie, I was like, well, I think, you know, my rating will be high, but I think I'm going to, my big takeaway is that I didn't get enough answers about Tom. And that character was just kind of left to the side because Ransom was the lead. And
for me, it's funny because I didn't even think about it. So it was kind of a shock to me when when it came back and that was the ending, I was like, oh, that makes sense. That makes so much more sense.
Which part? That he was in the casket or that he was the shooter?
That he was the shooter.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even think about it at the time. I wasn't like, where's Tom during this fight? I wasn't really thinking about it. I was like, Tom, you son of a bitch, you left him.
Right.
Because, you know, you already think like, you know, he probably knows that, you know, that Ransom is going to go off with Vera Miles, even if he doesn't want to admit it. So he would leave him there You know, you think possibly, you think that this guy is roguish enough to not come save Jimmy Stewart. Like, it gives you just enough of that that you don't necessarily miss it when he's not there.
And I'm trying to remember, at what point does Tom get drunk and go into that depression and go burn his house down? Is that after the killing?
That's after the fight. Yeah, that's after the fight and after Vera, because Vera Miles is fixing up Ransom in the store with the fixing up his arm, and Tom comes in and he's like, "So you're choosing him over me?" And she's like, "Yeah, because I'm a woman with my own agency and I can fall in love with whoever I want to." And I really liked that. Like, I liked that they gave her agency in making the decision.
They did, but it's like, kind of that she's a pawn for the story, I felt like, a little bit. I mean, and that's kind of, you get some of that shallow depiction in these westerns. Like, and we can talk about, you know, Woody Strode's character as well to that extent. Sure. But that does add such a layer on to Tom's really... really kind of, for lack of a better term, like, dramatic reaction to seeing them, because he already kind of knew, but as I didn't even really put together, that's just minutes after Tom saved Rance's life.
Right.
He's so the one that nobody's is gonna get no credit for taking out Liberty Valance. And then he sees them together. So he's so upset. He goes and gets drunk at the bar and burns down the part of his house that he's been building for Hallie for her, these years.
Yeah.
And when we see that part of the house in the beginning part of the movie, it's never rebuilt. Like, the house was burnt down, and I think, at least I assumed at the time, like, the house was burnt down when he was killed.
Right.
Like, whatever happened to the guy in the casket was, he was attacked at his house was burnt down and he was killed. Right. And no, he did that himself like 20 plus years before and never fixed it.
Exactly. Yep. He never fixed it. And that's sort of part of the legend. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so sad. I mean, it's just sad to, we don't know what happens to Tom after Rance leaves, but we do know that, you know, they do say at the beginning that he gave up his gun many years ago. So at some point he stops with the violence. And that's another theme in this movie that I do want to touch on, is the kind of two different philosophies between Tom and Rance, where Rance is like, we're going to use our brains, we're going to outsmart him, we're going to take him to court, we're going to lock him up. And Tom is like, no, we're going to use
We're in the Wild West.
Yeah, and we're going to use our guns. We're going to shoot them.
Right. And it's that sort of juxtaposition of also, like, not only are the times changing, like, the Wild West time is being taken over by the time of civility, as far as, you know, territories becoming statehoods and starting to have governors and senators and civilization coming to the West. And it's sort of the migration of people away from the Wild Wild West era to civilization. So we see that, but it's also the striking philosophical difference and sort of the hypocrisy in Rats a little bit of what are you willing to do or justify to yourself in order for it to be, for violence to be okay? Because he's saying all this stuff about how we're not going to do this and we're not going to do that. And then at the end of the day, he does actually still try to kill Liberty Valance. So,
and he makes it, his career is made because of an act of violence, whether he did it or whether Tom did it, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Exactly.
What ended up getting him the power that he needed to get statehood for where they were and get the city to be better was built on the back of violence.
Exactly. So it's like, what sort of sins of your past are you willing to live with to get what you want?
Or, you know, are forced to live with? Because you can see there are times in the present timeline when he is not, you know, he is living with this guilt.
For sure.
And not just because of Tom, probably because of, you know, he is potentially running for vice president because of something, you know, and we've seen this in other movies, and I wish I could think of some good examples of
sure.
You know, a political figure not in real life, because I don't want to touch that, but in pop culture and movies and in TV, who did something terrible to get their career to where it is supposed to be. And I think probably some characters, House of Cards and
Palpatine.
To tie it back to Star Wars. I get Senator, less Star Wars Senator than
Palpatine,
this movie.
You know, bringing it back to Star Wars. I mean, we have, you know, you have Frank Underwood doing whatever he can in House of Cards to get himself further. You have, you know, Nixon in All the President's Men, which is true life leading into a movie. You have, you know, you have like The Candidate with Robert Redford, which might come up later for me. Bullworth with Warren Beatty.
Yeah, I just feel like there's it's just like the idea of your whole political career being built off of a lie. And that lie eventually coming out. I do think it's probably House of Cards that I'm thinking of, because I think there were a couple instances of that for different characters.
For sure.
You know what it was? There was the guy who ran against Frank. What is his name? I can't remember what his name. Conway.
Schwibby Conway.
And I think spoilers for House of Cards, sort of. I think his career was built off like being a war hero.
Off his military record, yeah.
But he wasn't really a war hero. And I think there's a couple times where there's people in media who are alleged war heroes, and it comes out they weren't. And I think this is a war hero. It's a domestic war instead of a international war.
Well, speaking of war heroes, I mean, this is the Wild Wild West. What good is the Wild Wild West without a Wild Wild villain?
You keep saying Wild Wild West, and I expect you to say Jim West.
It's going to come up later. Just kidding. Geez. It's not coming up later. I'm not suggesting Jim West. But how was this your first introduction to the great Lee Marvin, or had you seen him in anything before?
No, first time. I've seen one of his 65 movies. He is, and I'm trying to think of somebody else, arguably the best villain that we've covered on this podcast.
He's incredible. He is a son of a bitch. And he's really good at it.
And I know that I think this movie comes up later too, but definitely a direct inspiration for Buford Tannen in Back to the Future 3. I mean, they have the exact same mannerisms, the way his jaw kind of hangs down. Liberty Valance, I can't believe we're probably, 30 minutes into this conversation and haven't talked about him and that performance, but such a great, hateable villain.
Just his entrance when he's robbing the stagecoach is just an incredible.
And you can't even see his face because he's covered. He's covered with a mask, which good for him for wearing a mask. But we're only seeing his eyes at that. And he's still, you could just tell from his eyes and from his voice, like, this guy is a piece of shit.
Yeah. And I mean, being your main weapon being a whip is just really, really bad. I mean, there's so many layers and undertones to that I don't know that we really want to get into, but brutality of his main weapon of choice being a whip is just like awful and adds to his real villainous brutality. And that's the question, is does his brutality justify, you know, what Vance does or what Rance does?
I mean, it's hard to say what justifies shooting, but I mean, at least what Rance thought he did. I mean, Rance was doing that for self-defense, right? Like he had no choice but to stand up to him, and then he had been shot once, and so.
And especially after Peabody was attacked, I mean, almost killed. He knew that he was going to be next, so he had to do something. And you obviously had a marshal who wasn't going to do anything about it. Right. So at what point do you have to take justice into your own hands is the question,
I do think that there is, and we haven't really even talked about the politics part of this, but, I talked earlier about how this movie is an onion. And I think part of part of one of those layers of the onion is the political nature of this film. That this film is really a political movie about the fight for statehood. And as we hear about, I retweeted you today and I said, in addition to this movie, statehood for DC, because we're in the fight for statehood for another territory right now. And, it's like we're seeing these people who want to be represented because they're not being protected from the bullies that are coming from north of the picket line,
who want to come and rob our stagecoaches and take our liberties.
Exactly. And
which is the great irony of his name being Liberty.
Well, and that's, I think, the perfect irony of his name being Liberty, because this is those people who yell about liberty but don't actually want to abide by any rules and don't want to abide by any, they say, I'm not going to wear my mask because of liberty, and so they're putting everybody else in danger. It's like this guy named Liberty is putting all these town folks in danger, and his name is literally Liberty. I mean, it's it just ties in so nicely to like
but my liberties.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. We have the far he's like the far right wing guy, literally named Liberty. And I don't really know how the name Ransom ties in, but we've got the left wing guy who's saying, no, we want, you know, we want to have education for everybody. We want to share. We want to share in the prosperity. We want to have statehood for, you know, whatever state they were in. I think I'm assuming it's California, but I don't actually know what state they were in. And just seeing those two poles of politics. And then we have Tom's character who falls somewhere in the middle where he's like, no, you know, we can take care of ourselves. And, but eventually realizes that there is some benefit to using your brain and having that shared community that Rance is pushing for.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, and I think it could be something about, like, how, you know, Ransom is sort of having to hold the territory hostage in order to force them to get what they is actually good for them, which is the statehood, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. If somebody has a good reason for his name, because Ransom is not a name you ever hear, so
no, it's not. Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that is, but you know, I do love this idea of like Ransom is this, you know, he comes in from the East Coast and he follows West, manifest destiny. He goes to the West and comes in, and then he brings his like East Coast elitism of education and the law and being a lawyer and like fancy pants to this town.
You know, at what point is being taken over by civilization a good thing versus being a bad thing? Like, where is the line? And that's sort of what this movie is reckoning with as well. Like, I mean, in the long run, you know, yeah, it's good that we have education and we have the trains and we have, you know, the schools and the railroads and the you know, the sheriffs who are actually going to do their jobs. But what are we losing to get all that?
Everything seemed a lot better from what we saw.
What are we ransoming? You know, and what we're ransoming is our own self, you know, our own self-identity. Because Ransom loses who he actually is to get all those things.
He maintains
his own reputation to get all that.
Yeah, I guess if you say that that's
become this other person.
If you say that that's embracing the violence, I guess I could see that. Because there is, you know, his philosophy is like, I'm not going to carry a gun, I'm not going to shoot. And it is interesting that by the end of the movie, Ransom and Tom kind of flip, right? Where Ransom is the one with the gun, and by, you know, before Tom's death, he doesn't carry a gun anymore, and he's left that part of his life. Yeah, I do think too, like there were, you know, I had some observations that I had on the. In the first scene, again, like going back on that rewatch, when the train shows up and one of the first lines that we hear is one of the newspaper guys saying, first time you've ever kept a secret. Now, it's not directed at Ransom, I don't think. I think it's I watched it a couple times. I could not tell who he was directing that line to. But, you know, that line, first time you've ever kept a secret. If you want to say the first line of the movie is telling you what the movie's about is him living with this secret. And as Rance is getting off of the train bells are going for a solid couple minutes, and it is, you know, for whom the bell tolls, like the bell is tolling for Ransom as he comes back home.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. So we have not talked much about Pompey, and obviously that was the connection from last week. So that's the Woody Strode character. Woody Strode was also in Spartacus. Thank you. Yeah, Spartacus last week as one of the other gladiators. He has a much bigger role in this movie. He's really kind of Tom's sidekick. And of course, he is the only African-American in this movie. And I think that's definitely noteworthy for the time when this movie takes place, but also when the time when this movie was made.
Yeah, and it's noteworthy for a couple of different reasons. One, as we talked about earlier, the main villain having a whip is very symbolic, especially
slavery.
In the interaction with him, and then as well as when Ransom is teaching the Declaration of Independence to the class, and he talks about liberty and justice for all men who are created equal, and he has Pompey read that part.
Yes.
And very, very deliberately, like, it's the movie is making a choice there to be like, by the way, here's another layer to this movie about we are forgetting what this country was built on.
Right.
Because, I mean, this movie came out right before things were starting to heat up with the civil rights movement.
Right, this is 1962.
Yeah, so this movie, you know, continues to have layers of what it's trying to say and what it's trying to teach us.
And I'm really glad you brought up that scene of Pompey talking about the amendments.
Yeah.
And obviously they're talking about the 13th Amendment, the abolition of slavery. During that shot when he's talking, and that room has pictures of presidents all over it, there is a picture of Abraham Lincoln
right above his head.
Right over his shoulder. Yep. And it was such perfect framing for that.
It was really well done.
Just remind you of the time when this is, because this is, you know, this is probably what, like 1870 or so. So
this is probably 1875-ish.
Yeah. So it's within 10 years of slavery being abolished. And is, you know, for the one black character in the movie to be the one who's talking about that and giving that line, I thought that was really significant.
Yeah, it was incredibly powerful, and I thought that Woody Strand's performance was really, really good. I liked him. I wish he'd been given a little more to do. I mean, that's another fault of movies that were made around this time. I mean, a lot of African-American actors were still fighting for screen time.
Right. And you even look at where he's credited in the movie, and he's credited. I mean, he's credited after John Carradine. I mean, he's way down on the list, and he's probably the fifth lead of this movie. Sixth
he's the
lead
fourth
of this
character.
Movie?
He's the fourth main character we meet.
Right.
Because he's sitting there by Tom's casket, and it's like he's there throughout the film, the beginning and the end, and it's unfortunate that he is relegated to such low billing. It's an unfortunate side of the times.
Right. Exactly.
You know, we're still. I mean, African American actors are still sort of fighting for, you know, equal billing and equal pay
opportunities.
In films, but it's certainly better than what it was, but it could still be better.
Yeah. For sure. What do you think of the relationship between Pompey and Tom? I mean, is it like this is not that long after slavery?
Right.
Is this a friendship and they, you know, this is a totally kind of mutual relationship? Do you think there is kind of a subservience?
Definitely some subservience in the, especially because of how Tom orders him around, you know, especially with the building of the house and the painting and the come here, get this, get that. There's definitely a subservience. And he even says, you work for me.
True. Yeah.
When they're in the bar and so he definitely, you know, and he, when Tom comes back in the school scene, he gets really mad that Pompey is there and hasn't been working on the house. So he definitely directly works for Tom. And, you know, we don't get a clear picture of, you know, I doubt it's an actual fair wage.
Right. Yeah, probably not.
It probably isn't.
Pompey is the only one who seems to really have Tom's back throughout this. Pompey's the one who takes him home. Pompey's the one who saves him when the house is on fire, who lets the horses out of the stable so they aren't killed. Right. He's the one who throws the gun to Tom when Tom is going to shoot Liberty. So
he's also there at the very end for Tom. He's the only one at Tom's
funeral. That's a good point.
Before Rance gets back. So, I mean, they certainly, you know, it's implied that they definitely are friends, but it's that same part of, like, you know, are they only friends because they're coworkers, or are they coworkers and friends?
I mean, I think Pompey is there for Tom. Pompey goes above and beyond. Pompey does things he doesn't have to do for Tom. And I do kind of think of it as almost like, you know, we have Rance. And Tom is the man behind Rance. Tom is the one actually responsible for shooting Liberty Vance. And Pompey is the man behind Rance.
Yeah. I mean, it's another way. It sort of goes with the whole onion thing of this movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's the layers, for sure.
Yeah. I don't think we've talked a lot about Hallie, but I do think that she is very solid in this role. I think she's, you know, the object of both of their affection, ends up choosing Rance at the end, but clearly still has feelings for Tom. She goes and digs up that cactus blossom to bring to his funeral. And And again, that opening scene where she goes to the house and she sees it's burnt and and has Andy Devine go and get the cactus blossom for her. She does, again, that's just great, great facial reactions from her. And you can see just the years and how weathered she is mentally from you know, all of the things that happened during their time in Shinbone. So
yeah, for sure.
I definitely want to make sure we shout out her performance.
Yeah, she's really great. I thought everybody in this movie was doing a really good job. There's one sidekick whose performance was a little much for me.
Steve Buscemi guy.
Yeah,
he reminded me so much of Steve Buscemi.
Yeah,
I thought he was great.
It was really funny though.
Yeah, I liked Liberty Vance's sidekicks. I love. There's a shot where he gets thrown out of the bar, and there's a couple times where the bartender, I was like, oh, that's where the term kicked out of the bar comes from, because the bartender literally kicks him off of the porch. And I was like, oh, that's probably why they call it getting kicked out of the bar.
Absolutely.
Is because of that.
Through the doors and out. Yeah,
he gets thrown out the swinging doors, and you can see, like, they keep the camera transfixed on the swinging doors, so you can see what's behind him, and then they close, and then they open again, and it's only each time they open that you can actually see what's going on behind him.
Yeah.
It's a really neat effect. I liked that. I do like the whole, state delegation scene, too, where we have the election between Rance and John Carradine. John Carradine is the one. I guess he's not really the one running. He's like the showman who's introducing the guy running against.
He's the hype man.
And I love that he acts like it's all the political theater that comes from him, where he acts like he has a speech, but there's nothing written on the piece of paper. And then the horse rides in, and the guy's standing on the horse doing all these tricks with a lasso, but there's no substance to what the ranchers are actually doing. They're just putting on political theater to try to get elected.
I mean, that's kind of what you had to do back then. You had to be memorable, and you had to make a
apparently not, because they lost.
Well, yeah. Because you can't compete with the legend of the man who shot Liberty Vance. No.
True. Yeah, I guess. Oh, and I guess the man who, I guess that's a whole facade as well. So
that's a whole legend. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's that legend is more important than anything else. You know.
Yeah. All right. I just have a couple other notes, and then maybe we can go on and move on to feedback, and we can see what the feedback, I think, will help guide some more of this discussion. I think I'm overall just like so pleased with not just this movie, but like the amount of things there are to discuss and chew on from this movie. I think this is this is one I would recommend to just about anybody, even if you're a Western fan or not. I think this movie brings so much to the table. It has some really great lines. It's very relevant now. And is more than just a Western. So
for sure. Like, I mean,
spoilers
it's really
for my rating.
It's really more of a political drama than it is a straight up Western, I think. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. So let's see. So just some of the things that I noticed in this movie that I want to make sure I point out.
Yeah.
That gun training scene where we have Rance riding up. So Rance is in a carriage.
Yeah.
And Tom rides up on a horse, and they're going right next to each other. And that was like, wow, there's so much duality between the two of them and how different they are. And then I started really noticing like how their outfits would even be different, where, Rance would be in lighter colors and Tom would be in darker colors. But then in the future timeline, Rance is in both. Rance is in a black jacket, black pants, but a bright white vest, which again, that really pops because of the black and white. And even when there's he's doing the gun training with him, which if we want to say Star Wars, it kind of reminded me of like a Luke and Obi-Wan Kenobi type thing. But Tom shoots the paint can and the white paint splatters all over the back of Rance. And I did feel like, again, I was like, oh, I wonder if that's where Rance is like sort of going to break bad because of this training. And I think it was more just symbolic of some of Tom getting on Rance. So I thought that was really important scene.
I really liked that scene. That's like, it's sort of a scene that exists in a lot of both Western and war movies, because you always have somebody who doesn't know how to shoot, or they don't think can shoot and hold their own, and they have to do like a test to see if they're going to be any good at shooting this bow and arrow or shooting this gun or driving this car or whatever. And it's always, you know, somebody laughing at the other person as they try to do it. And then they, you know, end up actually in the end being good at it. But this movie subverts that because, you know, Rance misses.
Right.
You know, like,
which makes you wonder where did Rance's bullet go? I hope he didn't accidentally like shoot somebody inside the bar with it.
To get hit the post next to it.
Okay, yeah, that's. I think we would know.
I'm sure I hit the post next to him.
Yeah.
But
And then the other note that I had is, how good does steak and beans and potatoes and a deep dash apple pie sound?
Honestly, not bad, because I haven't eaten since lunch, and
I don't even eat meat anymore. And when they said that, I was like, oh man, I could go for a giant plate. Like, there were the plates of food, they were these giant plates with a huge steak and like a big bowl of baked beans and potatoes. And then, I mean, nothing sounds better right now than a deep dish apple pie. So when they, that food looked great.
Yes, please.
Yeah. It was a shame when it hit the floor.
Yeah. Oh man, you do.
Yeah.
Couple other production notes I had. So there is an actor in this film during the school scene. There's the young man who comes in, and he's obviously been like off fishing with his dad, and he gets there late, and it's supposed to be a teenager. That's an actor named OZ Whitehead, who was actually 50 years old, like a teenager in this movie.
Which character was the teenager?
So during the school scene, there's the kid that comes in overalls, and he's like got a fishing pole in his hand, and he's like, sorry, I'm late, yada yada.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. And that's a 50-year-old man. That's not a teenager.
Oh man.
And yeah. So that was really funny. I was on the lookout for him once I saw that production note, and I was like, oh yeah, there he is.
It was interesting that the school, like that tiny, like the school was just a tiny room, everybody in the same room, and it had both kids and adults. It seemed like most of the kids were actually Mexican, and that it was attached to the printing shop where they printed the newspaper. So I think there is a lot of stuff with like the media and how the media covers things and how integral the media is to society.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even talk about how important the media and newspapers are in this movie. I mean, this is... You know, we definitely will, but this is a newspaper movie. It's a political movie. It's a Western.
I mean, this movie like is just, there's so much here. It's one of those that's growing the more we talk about it. And I was already super high on this movie.
Yeah. I mean, at the time of its release, this was actually touted as a lesser film by a once great director, John Ford. And it was actually relegated to the bottom half of double features because they used to have So in movie houses, they used to have like 2-for-1 shows where you'd have like a showing at 7 and then followed by another movie at like 9. And this was the 9 o'clock show or the later show.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I did this as the first show for my, I did this in Bonnie and Clyde as my double feature last night.
Nice.
And I did this one first. And Bonnie and Clyde also, lots of stuff about the media in that movie. So those two connected for sure.
Nice.
One other thing that I will say is I'm very glad I didn't read the Letterboxd description of this before I watched it. I knew nothing about this movie going into it. And the Letterboxd description, a senator who became famous for killing a notorious outlaw returns for the funeral of an old friend and tells the truth behind about his deed. What a terrible spoilery description.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Like, hey, you don't know. I didn't know he was going to become a senator until I saw the movie. I didn't, you know, like all of this stuff is reveals that come way late in the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
he becomes a senator. Remember, that there's a killing of an outlaw. I mean,
yeah, I'm glad I didn't look. You remember last week you asked me who I thought shot Liberty Valance, and I said I think it's going to be Lee Marvin. Turns out not Lee Marvin.
I don't remember who I said.
Lee Marvin didn't shoot himself.
I think I probably said John Wayne.
I think he probably did. Yeah. So I think he won that bet.
Yeah. So bad on you, Letterboxd. Come on. Yeah, real bad. I'm sure they just pull it from like the, you know, whatever like the description is that they have everywhere. Right. I'm just glad I didn't see a description. I'm already avoiding trailers. Now I got to avoid descriptions as well.
You got to avoid Letterboxd.
Yeah. All right. What do we got for feedback? I already saw the rating of one person who is in this community, and I commented on his Letterboxd rating of this, and I said, "Dude," because I was not happy. Yeah.
Pilgrim.
Yeah. No, he's not a pilgrim. He's a dude. I was not happy.
City slicker.
All right. I'll kick us off.
Start with your friend Jeff.
Oh, good. Yeah, because the next one's gonna make me viscerally angry. all right. So Jeff's. I'm not angry, Jeff. This is a really well-made movie and story. All-star cast with Jimmy Stewart, John Wayne, and Lee Marvin. Only minor drawback from casting Stewart was in his 50s when this movie was made. Hard to make him look like a fresh-faced kid just out of law school, but if you forget that, the acting is great. I give this a 4.5. And then he also said, side note of the use of the term dude, back then it was a negative, and dude was an overdressed sissy type from the city. I do think that kind of describes France.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and so when Valance calls Stoddard dude, it's supposed to be an insult. Yeah, right. I wasn't sure if it was just kind of like the way they talk back then, but that
it's a little bit of both, because like that doesn't track with John Wayne's character, John T. Chance calling Dean Martin dude in Rio Bravo. Because I mean, he's just dude, right? He's not a city slicker in Rio
right.
Bravo.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So
I don't know, maybe it's like a term of endearment sometimes too.
So, all right, dude.
All right, let's hear this next one.
All right, Molly writes in and says, this was not an entertaining watch for me. Every time John Wayne said Pilgrim, I wanted to scream. One-dimensional characters, bad acting by the leads, and a cliched story with an ending you could see coming a mile away. I found it boring visually as well. If this was done on purpose as some kind of meta statement about Westerns, no thanks. A story about violence versus civilization or the inaccuracy of history is good material, but I don't think this delivered whatever statement it was trying to make in any interesting way. I did love Edmund O'Brien as Mr. Peabody, the newspaper man. He was great. 2.5 stars from Molly. I'm glad she liked Edmund O'Brien and Mr. Peabody. I thought he was great, too.
Is that like a, you know how there's like the Peabody Award for journalism?
Yeah.
Is that
definitely named after him? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think factually like in real life named after him, but the character was definitely named right. that on purpose for sure.
Yeah. No. So I guess this movie isn't for everybody.
Yeah. I'm disappointed. Molly didn't dig it. I hope we do better next time for her.
Hey, you know what? I think she had the highest rating of all the listeners on Spartacus last week. So
that's a good point. That's a good point. But yeah, I mean. I really like, I mean, I'm a sucker for really, you know, good Western / political dramas, and I thought this was really, really good. And I'm also a sucker for both John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart. And I mean, I can see where she's coming from, that some of it may not have worked as well for her, but I mean, it worked for me. As a fan of both of them, I can overlook some of the flaws in their acting style because I'm used to the two of them, you know.
They both have very distinct acting styles.
Absolutely.
And very distinct. I mean, you couldn't cast, like, two different people. And I'm sure there are other movies where they have, like, you know, two people square off and they're so different. And I do think that the differences of them is very striking. Having watched a lot of John Wayne movies, like, I don't really think John Wayne is – I mean, he's a pretty good actor in some of the movies. But, like, I wouldn't go out of my way to like be like, oh, I love John Wayne the way I do, you know, Tom Hanks or others.
He's not a fantastic actor. He's very good at being John Wayne.
Yes. And Jimmy Stewart is very good at being the kind of everyman, high pitched, like stringy John Stewart.
He's Tom Hanks.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's why Shop Around the Corner and You've Got Mail are like perfect to be, you know, the remake of each other.
Absolutely.
All right. So Stefan wrote in. We did ask last week for some Woody Strode and Spartacus. Yeah. So he says, Woody Strode broke the NFL's color barrier, fought in World War II, nominated for a Golden Globe.
Beautiful.
Most likely would have been on the 1936 Berlin Olympics, but Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Played in the Rose Bowl, drafted by the Dodgers, was classmates and friends with Jackie Robinson, married a Hawaiian princess. Namesake of Woody from Toy Story, spoiler alert, I did see that when I was looking for stuff for him. Professional wrestler, his body was used as the molds for characters at Disneyland. Why is there not a Woody Strode movie yet? That is an amazing, that's like a Forrest Gump life. Yeah, I think we need to have something about Woody Strode.
Yes, we definitely do. I can't believe there hasn't been a Woody Strode movie. Come on, man.
Yeah.
What are we doing, Hollywood? Get it together.
Who would play Woody Strode in the Woody Strode movie? The Rock?
Ooh. Yeah, probably The Rock. Yeah.
All right. So what happened after Spartacus? Julius Caesar and Crassus form an alliance with Pompey, ironically the name of Woody Strode's character in this film. The three of them control – oh, this is what actually happened. The three of them control the Roman Republic, and there is no other major slave uprisings. Crassus dies, and Caesar and Pompey fight a civil war until Pompey is killed in Egypt, where Caesar meets Cleopatra. Caesar is killed in front of and not just by Brutus, and another after another series of civil wars, his heir Augustus becomes the first emperor of Rome. All right. So we did ask what happened after Spartacus, right, between that and the end of Caesar. That is the answer. All right. Now on to Stefan's comments about The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. The movie is a little predictable, but did not take away from its entertainment. All the actors were great, and now I finally understand the John Wayne impression in pop culture. It wasn't as gritty as a normal Western. Most of this movie takes place indoors. However, that and the flashback made it feel unique. 3.5 out of 5 stars.
Nice.
So there were a couple of spots where I could tell the audio was filmed indoors. Like the audio changed a little bit. I think there was one where Liberty was yelling, and I was like, that, the acoustics of that do not sound like it's outside.
And even the stagecoach scene probably wasn't filmed outdoors. Like it had that sort of fake woods.
Like the SNL, that, like what you feel Spartacus when you watch did. SNL sketches.
Exactly. Yeah, like Spartacus did the week before with the garden scene where Spartacus and his lady love fall in love. It's that same sort of fake set feel to the stagecoach scene. So that felt the same to me.
While we're talking about Spartacus, so I listened to the Spartacus episode of Unspooled, which I really like that podcast. They go through the whole AFI Top 100 and do a podcast for each movie. You know, if you're looking for more bonus content, it's Paul Scheer, and I'm blanking on her name right now, but I cannot remember her name.
Is that Gina Ann Rayfield?
No, it's all right, I'll look it up. I feel like an ass. I can't remember her name.
You're looking that up, I'll go on to Jim Crumley's feedback.
I did want to note two notes about Spartacus that they brought up that we did not have. The first is that in Spartacus, there was the scene of the snails and oysters that we talked about. So that was not in the original cut of Spartacus. That was added later. And so in that scene, they actually lost the audio for it. And so they didn't have Laurence Olivier's voice recorded, so they actually had Anthony Hopkins come in and record ADR that they played over that scene. And so when you're watching it, you're actually hearing Anthony Hopkins. You're not hearing Laurence
Olivier.
That's
incredible.
And it's like an uncredited role. So that I thought was a very interesting tidbit. They also brought up the Woody Strode, Woody from Toy Story thing.
Right.
And the third one that I thought was great is that so Kirk Douglas made Stanley Kubrick go to a therapist because he was so terrible on set to the cast. and the therapist ended up either writing the story or told him about the story, which led to Eyes Wide Shut. So had he not gone to this therapist because of Spartacus, Eyes Wide Shut never would have
happened. That's incredible. I like that.
So just a little Spartacus tidbit in the middle
of
this.
That's fantastic. I like that. That's incredible.
All right, what did Jim say?
All right, Jim says, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is another classic. Some of the old Western tropes don't show their age, and you could definitely tell this movie had a lot smaller budget than Spartacus. The story is well told, though, and it has a lot more depth than the average Western. I give it 4.5. Yeah. Good score from Jim Crumley.
Yeah. The thing that they always say, too, about, like, MCU movies right now is, like, they say, like, superhero movies as they evolve, you know, when Logan comes out or Deadpool and kind of these evolutions of the superhero movie, they say it's the same timeline that the Westerns took. The Westerns kind of all had the same format, and then over the years they evolved and started having different genres mix in. And I do think Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Searchers as well.
True Grit is going to do that, you know, 5 years away from this movie. True Grit is going to do that, where John Wayne is just straight up playing a bad guy.
Yeah. Like, so it's interesting to see that in the Westerns. And this month I've watched so many Westerns, a lot of the ones that are at the top of the list. And for me, the Western genre has been a great escape from just kind of the things going on in the world, just because it just feels like such a different time.
Yeah, I agree.
And it almost feels like fantasy, even though it's like semi-historical stuff. So, if anybody has any Western recommendations or if they want some Western recommendations and stuff I'd watch, I'd love to give those. So, All right. So my buddy Kyle, this was the dude I was referencing earlier.
Dude.
He said he was torn between a 3 and a 3.5. I think I bullied him into making it a 3.5 by that dude comment. So he said, old Westerns and the hyper machismo that comes with them just aren't my thing. I enjoyed Peabody in the newsletter. I got a laugh out loud of the Marshall. Did you notice Liberty Vance's shirts were fancy?
Fancy.
I noticed his vest is more like it kind of reminds me of like a fourth grade teacher's vest where it had all like the designs on the front of it.
See my vest.
Kyle on Letterboxd also had the same comment of Molly that the we get it, you call people pilgrims.
Well, I mean, he had to get his money's worth because this is the first time he did it, so you know.
And somehow it like became like
his thing.
What is that, the Streisand effect?
Where
everybody thought that that was his thing, even though it wasn't his thing until later. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. All right. And now I get Olin. What did Olin have to say? More like an earlier 30s Ford film with a strong studio setting, giving a very self-contained environment for the most part. John Wayne in a role he felt had little flesh, playing the reluctant hero. Favorite exchange probably goes to Stewart when the Pompeii character couldn't remember the line about all men being created equal, which Ransom says many people forget, quite clearly alluding to how non-white men were not often considered to be covered by this line. Having watched other Westerns recently, particularly thinking of High Noon, I love how the evilness of Liberty Valance was clearly shown and not just talked about. A lot of times, the baddies just appear for the shootout without actually getting any film experience. Lee Marvin was wonderful. Rating 4 out of 5.
Yeah. Liberty was great. I don't think we could say enough about just what a good villain he was. And that scene in the schoolhouse was really good. I also recently watched High Noon. I like High Noon. High Noon is another one where they kind of play with the genre a little bit and add some elements. I won't spoil what that particular element about High Noon is. But High Noon and Rio Bravo are kind of twin films. They go together. Rio Bravo was made as a reaction to High Noon. High Noon's a good one too. And finally, I round us out with Max feedback, which is either a 4 or a 5. Either a 4 or a 4.5 out of 5. So we will round
let him average to a 4.25.
So what does that get us for listeners?
That gives us a listener average of a 3.82. So let's see how you and I either make this a 3.5 or a 4. I'm going to let you go second because I think you're higher on this movie overall than I am. I think this is a really great movie. Do I think this is the best Western of all time? Do I think this is even a superb Western? I don't. I really like the performances of everyone in this movie. Do I think that this is a perfect movie? I don't. I think there are better political thrillers. I think there are better newspaper movies. I think there are better Westerns that we may even get to next week that come out around this era. I can't call it a perfect movie. I do think the black and white actually adds. It is a great thing. But Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne are just better in movies that both came before this and after this. Even though we've talked about a lot in this movie, things we really, really loved and the depth of the movie, I still think it's an average overall Western. And I'm going to end up giving it a 3.5 as well.
Oh, my God. viscerally angry at you right now. That's okay. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I don't know.
It has layers. It has depth.
This movie's an onion.
It is an onion. And I may feel differently and bump it up to a 4 or a 4.5 the next time I watch it, because I definitely want to watch it again. But I think if I had seen this movie before we watched it today, my opinion on it would be higher for sure.
So your opinion doesn't grow with this discussion we had? I thought we had a very good discussion about this.
I thought we had a great discussion, but I can't let that completely override that there's just enough in this movie that doesn't quite hang together the way it should, that you're having to do a lot of the legwork yourself.
That's all right.
I think in our discussion that the movie isn't doing enough of. So it's a 3.5 for me.
So I can't think of any reason not to give it a 5, but for some reason there's something stopping me from giving it a 5. But I don't know what that is. I think it's just because it's
It's because there are better movie versions of this movie. Both.
No, I don't. I don't think there. I don't think there's any other version of this movie that exists. I don't think there's a version of this movie that blends this many different genres and ideas. And I don't know how many movies I could talk about the way I've talked about this one, which isn't a great endorsement of our podcast. But like, it's like all of the different ideas that came from it. I don't know if I could have that discussion about that many other movies. And I'm thinking about Apocalypse Now last year, and I am looking, and I gave it a 4.5 for Apocalypse Now. Okay. I also gave Spartacus a 4.5, and I feel like this movie, Apocalypse Now, Spartacus, like that's kind of the like the trifecta for me of movies that I hadn't seen before this podcast, and I was so glad that I had the opportunity to see and then get to talk about. And so I think I got to give this the same score as Spartacus and Apocalypse Now, but I can't tell you what is deducting that half star. I don't know, but
so it's a 4.5.
It's a 4.5. We'll say that I'm taking half point off because of the stupid letterbox description.
Fair enough.
I don't know. I'm sure there's something. I also like, you know, you and I are both like doing the Lost rewatch right now, and I do love the mysterious man in a coffin thing that we don't know who that is.
Right. There is a lot of lostiness to this movie, especially with the flashback narrative and the, you know, the trying to outrun your past and Tabula Rasa and all of that.
And the two guys with two very different life philosophies that
man of science, man of faith
worked. Yeah, man of science, man of violence, man of man of brains. So
man of civil
I guess maybe if this movie was color for the bookends, I might like it better, although that might be kind of cheesy. You know what? Also, the lack of development of Pompey and Halley. Also, that can be why.
I think I'm going to actually bump this up to a 4. I think you're right. I think I'm being unfair. And that's going to give us, you know what? Screw it. If I can't, you know, given everything we've talked about, this movie definitely is closer to a 4 than a 3.5. So I'm going to go ahead and bump it to a 4. And that's going to give us an average of a 4.10, which is going to be a 4 for Letterboxd purposes.
So a 3.8, a 4, and a 4.5 gives a 4.10.
Whoops. 3.82. Yes, it's going to be a 4.1.
All right. Overall. 4.1 is our overall score. So it's that rounds down to a 4.
Correct, for Letterboxd.
But I do think we probably got, you know, we got 4.25. You know, we got a lot right around that. Even the people who gave it bad ratings, I think the lowest was Molly with a 2.5.
Right.
Which, interesting that, you know, Molly is the only female listener who wrote in with feedback. That's fair. So I'd be curious if other female listeners would have the same lower score.
I'd be curious, too.
Especially, you know, Kyle talks about the machismo. Well,
if we stick to the Western genre, maybe we'll find out next week.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is our rating. Let's get into connections to this movie, to The Ladder, that we've done so far this year. So I'm not going to be able to do this every week, but The Ladder that we've done so far, we started with Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Then we went to Monty Python, Life of Brian. Then last week we did Spartacus. And the fourth movie was Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. So what do you got connection-wise, besides Woody Strode? That was the
main I've got a few things besides Woody Strode. So obviously, so in this movie, there are obvious things such as senators and starting rumors about people and how a legend about a hero can grow and take over the minds of the people have that legend rule the way they think about that person.
Mm-hmm.
And worship them, and you know, obviously we see Ransom's legend grow in such a way that he's able to obtain political office because of who people think he is. And Spartacus is sort of the same thing, where the legend of Spartacus grows and he becomes this great hero and ends up dying in the end, but Ransom doesn't die in the end, but it's sort of the same sort of how a legend can grow type of thing. Mm. Obviously, we have senators and trying to obtain political office and of Pompey and circumstance surrounding that.
Yes. And a character named Pompey, apparently.
Pompey, but Pompey and Pompey. And the character definitely was probably named after the great Roman Emperor Pompey.
Yeah. I also think that idea of somebody being a leader and having followers behind them could be applied to all four of the movies we've done so far this year.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I mean, Young Frankenstein, we have both the monster that people are following, and you could probably connect the monster to Liberty, but then also Dr. Frankenstein.
Also, you have the legend of, you know, Victor von Frankenstein trying to outrun the legend of his father.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Who was the original Dr. Frankenstein, or his grandfather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you have the legend of Brian in Life of Brian as well.
Exactly. Yep.
So,
So Denver Pyle, who has a small role in this movie, as one of the bad guys. Denver Pyle was in The Great Race in 1965 with Tony Curtis, who appeared last week at Scorticus. So I wrote that down as a tangential connection.
Yeah.
Tangential connections.
Two other connections to other movies that we talked about. Well, I mean, I think actually one other connection to Spartacus is just the, you know, character leading a revolution. Now, this is a political revolution to get statehood, but and that kind of touches on what you said. But we have a stuttering character in this movie, which reminded me of that horribly cringy stuttering scene in Life of Brian. And then the other one that I have is Black and White chosen for story effect.
Right.
Then that connects back to Young Frankenstein.
Yeah,
for sure. Both are using black and white to kind of replicate the time period and the genre of the
movie they're referencing.
Yep.
For sure. Well, I think I have the perfect movie map for this week, and I don't think you can beat it.
Okay.
Do you want to go first or second?
Well, I had two thoughts. Both are kind of basic. One is I feel like Hamilton. I feel like Hamilton is probably, you know, like
trying to establish a country.
Right, exactly. And you know, Hamilton itself has, like, from like a meta-textual perspective, has become this legend of Alexander Hamilton because of the play. And, you know, how much of that is legend versus fact? I mean, there are talks about historical inaccuracy, and that, you know, the Hamilton cast is played by all people of color outside of, well, even actually everybody in that I think is played by a person of color. And
outside of King George.
Yes. Which is obviously not actually historically accurate. Of course, the movie map, if you're just joining us, the movie map is our segment we do every week where we connect the best connection from season one, from a movie that we covered in season one. So I'd say Hamilton. I would also say Citizen Kane is another one.
Yeah, that was going to be my most obvious. That's my coup d'etat is this movie is basically, it has so much in common with Citizen Kane. I mean, you have people running for political office to their own gains. You have how someone's legend can both embolden them and tear them apart. You have, you know, you have trying to outrun that legend. You have flashback narration based around something mysterious.
And starting with a dead body, too.
That a reporter is trying to figure out
yep.
in the very beginning. I mean, it starts with a dead reporter.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts with a reporter coming to Ransom and saying, why don't you tell me the true story of yada yada of who shot Liberty Valance? And, you know, then it all comes out. And it's the same way that the reporters are seeking the true story of who Charles Foster Kane was. And what his final words meant in Citizen Kane.
Yep.
It's the same sort of legacy thing. I think it most directly, you know, ties to Citizen Kane for sure.
Yeah. And like a prominent media member as well.
Yeah.
Like the media plays such a prominent role in both movies.
With the way media tells the story and the voting and the.
No, I agree. I think both are very good connections. And I did really like that this movie opens with a train because so much of season one we had movies that had trains.
We open on a train because of course we open on a train.
I did feel like a little bit of like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood from this movie too, and it might just be the time period when this movie was made. And that this was flashing back to an earlier time period, and then, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was flashing back to the 60s. I'd be curious if there was any John Ford, John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart connections in, like, if they're referenced at all in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't remember them being, but...
Not to my knowledge, no. Not to my recollection.
So, all right. Well, that is the movie map, and we will see next week where the movie map leads us, because it is time to pick our connections for next week. Of course, Once we do pick that connection, send in your feedback, your comments, your next movie connection, star ratings to us, themovieladder@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us @laddermovie and check out our Letterboxd page, because we put every movie that's brought up in these suggestions on our Movie Ladder Letterboxd. That is The Movie Ladder on Letterboxd. All right, so let's get into suggestions from people. I've already kind of peeked at them. We have some good ones. So the first one is The Quiet Man. Oh, these are from Jeff. The first one is The Quiet Man. This is another John Ford, John Wayne. Jeff has been saying, whether we pick this movie or not, I need to watch it sometime soon. And he was extolling about how great this movie is. I've never seen The Quiet Man. The next one, I think this is probably the most obvious connection from Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and this is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Yes. Jimmy Stewart becomes a congressman. I've only seen bits and I think I've seen it all the way through, but I really don't remember it. I've only seen bits and pieces, so it'd basically be a new watch for me. And the third is Following with Lee Marvin. We could do The Dirty Dozen.
Yes.
Which would be a blind spot for me as well.
So, absolutely love The Dirty Dozen. It's an incredible film.
We'll see if I continue doing blind spots. All four of the movies that we've watched this year have been blind spots for me. I'll be curious if we continue that. Although next week will be the first podcast in February, and we did say February would be Brendan Blind Spot Month. We'll see if we can pull that
off.
All right, so Olin has Sergeant Rutledge from 1960. Would he stroll in a leading role for a John Ford Western as the titular character? Strode in a much bigger role and important as an African American, taking a leading role in a major Western. Well, obviously, likes of John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara were among Ford's closest across. He developed a very strong relationship with Strode until Ford's death. All right. The next is The Philadelphia Story from 1940. James Stewart pitted in a love triangle against another major Hollywood star, this time Cary Grant. Great romantic comedy with Katharine Hepburn, written by Joe Mankiewicz this time, thought the recent Mank film was going to be about until its release. And Olin also suggests The Quiet Man from 1952, John Wayne and John Ford collaboration. It isn't March, which is St. Patrick's Day month yet, but I guess I can't turn down the opportunity to nominate a John Ford celebrated Irish film that won his final Best Director Oscar. One of my lecturers literally wrote the book on it, despite me doing maths rather than film studies course. So was Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, was that an Olin suggestion last week, or was that anybody else?
Was that not Stefan?
I don't know. I don't
know. It was Olin. Yeah, it was Olin. I did note it. It's Olin.
Nice. Good job, Olin.
Liberty All right. Valance.
Jim Crumley also suggests Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. He says it's an obvious suggestion, but sometimes you don't have to overthink it.
Absolutely.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is another Jimmy Stewart movie where he plays a senator who struggles with the tension between morality, politics, and the law.
Yep.
All right. Molly got very creative with hers. She said the man who wasn't there, black and white Coen Brothers film starring Billy Bob Thornton.
Yes.
The Man Who Fell to Earth, 1976, starring David Bowie. The Man Who Laughs, 1928, black and white silent movie about a man with a permanent smile who is said to be the inspiration for the Joker. Watch for free on YouTube. Very nice. And finally, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, 2018 film directed by Terry Gilliam and starring Adam Driver. I like that, The Man Who.
I do like that a lot. It goes with our I Am theme earlier. I am Brian. I am Spartacus.
All right. So Stefan, Disney's Robin Hood, Andy Devine as Friar Tuck.
Yes. So I wanted to talk about this when Stefan brought it up. So I recognized that voice immediately from Andy Devine. And I was like, holy crap, I know that voice. Where do I know that voice? Where do I know that voice? And I had to IMDb him and I was like, oh, that's right. He's in Robin Hood.
Yep.
And it's so he's incredible. I love Friar Tuck, the mole in Disney's Robin Hood. Disney's Robin Hood is a movie I grew up with that I've seen a million times. I absolutely love it. If you haven't watched it, go watch it.
Yeah, Andy Devine was, like I said, he was a highlight in Stagecoach when I watched it. He also was in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which I watched last year, which is hard to remember he was in it because there's so many actors in that movie.
Right, it's a cast of stars, right?
Robin Hood, that would be fun. It'd be our first animated film. The next is The Longest Day, starring John Wayne.
Yeah. That's the John, John Wayne World War II drama, I believe.
Yes. And 310 to Yuma, either one. The connection there is a Western. Also, a prominent train is featured in that. Yep. So we get back to our roots.
Yep. And 310 to Yuma, the remake was Russell Crowe and Christian Bale. And I remember seeing that when that came out.
I saw the remake. Yeah. But I didn't really like it, but I was younger and wasn't as
that well came out. I believe that came out the same month as the coward who shot Jesse James.
It might have been around the same time, but I think it was the same year as American Gangster, which also has Russell Crowe kind of going. Yeah. It's Russell Crowe and Denzel Washington going mano a mano in that one.
Interesting.
All right, Kyle's connections. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I read that it was a strong inspiration for this film, for A Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. The Man Who Wasn't There, another Man Who film about a murder. So that is another vote for Man Who Wasn't There. And finally, Brokeback Mountain, another Western about someone living a different kind of a false narrative.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a blind spot. Well, a lot of these are blind spots, but Brokeback Mountain is a blind spot for me. Speaking of not a blind spot, Max suggested Back to the Future 3, which I've seen a number of times. Definitely Buford Tannen was the inspiration, or was inspired by Liberty Valance. I think there are some other inspirations too, like a character getting really drunk towards the end of the movie before a final shootout, a prominent train again. So that could be a fun one. Ford Apache. This was a John Wayne, John Ford connection. He also said there are a couple other connections that he doesn't want to spoil that have to do with the story.
Yeah.
And then finally, The Dark Knight. And so I had to ask him to elaborate. Why The Dark Knight? And I said, it's just because Liberty Valance and the Joker are connected. And he said, no, it's more about the whole print the legend thing. I won't spoil since some people might have skipped ahead. But the public believing a certain narrative and that somebody is a hero. And that's kind of what happens at the end of The Dark Knight as well, because it's what they need to believe. And that the legend ends up becoming more important than the truth. So, and just he comments on how a lot of American progress was built on myth making, like Hamilton.
Good point.
So, all right. So why don't you do yours?
I go first. All right, cool. So there is one very obvious connection that nobody brought up. There is a spiritual sequel to this film that came out in 1976 called The Shootist that stars John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, many of the other minor actors from this film, including John Carradine. It came out in 1976. It's called The Shootist, and it's basically all of this cast reunited without John Ford, and it's about a former gunslinger who's looking for a way to die with dignity. So that's The Shootist. That's my first one. Second one I'm going to suggest is Unforgiven, which is a blind spot for me. It's credited with resurging the Western genre in the 1990s after a long layoff of decent Westerns being made. And this film sort of sunset Westerns for a while in the 1960s, so it's sort of a juxtaposition of that. But I don't know anything about Unforgiven.
I have not seen it either. But I do know that I think Clint Eastwood is playing like an old cowboy, like an old retired cowboy in it. So it's sort of similar to that aging theme. Yeah. Looking back, Unforgiven has been on my list for my personal watch list. I'm kind of making my way up to more current stuff.
I also have the Kelly Reichardt film Meek's Cutoff, which is about people trying to settle in unwieldy wilderness and bring civilization, much as Ransom is trying to do in this film. It takes place in the Old West. And then my final suggestion is going to be Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. And that is basically about someone trying to get a vendetta against someone who did them wrong.
So, also starring David Carradine, who is the son of John Carradine.
Good point. Yeah. There you go.
I was going to say, too, Meek's Cutoff. Is the sequel to Meek's Cutoff Korg's Cutoff?
Ha! That's funny.
Yeah. Thank you.
Piss off, Ghost. Yeah. I had a few honorable mentions I want to shout out.
Let me do mine first, because I don't have very many connections. I don't want you to shout out any of mine. And then you could do your honorable mentions. All right. So I had Philadelphia Story. I won't say that one. But I was glad none of the rest of them got taken. So the first is, I feel like, a very natural connection is the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. That is a longer movie, but it's kind of a more modern Western. It's got Brad Pitt and Ben Affleck's brother, Casey Affleck, in it. And it's about the legend of the man who killed Jesse James. So seems like a good natural connection. The next is has a ton of cast connections, is also directed by John Ford, and came out the same year. I do not know how they did both these movies in the same year. That is How the West Was Won. I know nothing about it, but it's got a ton of cast connections. Like, half the cast is in both movies.
That's how old Hollywood worked, man.
Yeah. And the third one I will do is another more modern Western. This was Woody Strode's last movie, and it is The Quick and the Dead. What I like about this is that it's a female lead. So we have done only male leads in this one. I think it's Sharon Stone is the female lead in The Quick and the Dead.
Yeah. And it's her, Gene Hackman, Russell Crowe, a young Leonardo DiCaprio, and a bunch of other cameos. I absolutely love The Quick and the Dead, and it's all about it's about dueling. And this film had an infamous duel in it, obviously. Right.
So, directed by Sam Raimi also.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi. So
classic Sam Raimi. I love The Quick and the Dead.
And so those three are all blind spots for me. The third, or my fourth one, is kind of a grab bag. So this one is Toy Story question mark. So because Woody Strode inspired Woody, the cowboy, in Toy Story, if this gets picked, I will do a random number generator, 1 to 4. And that is how we will pick the Toy Story. So I don't know which toys, because we've all seen all the Toy Stories.
Yeah.
So if we pick that one, then we'll do a random number generator to pick which Toy Story it is that we're watching. Nice.
Well, I did not have any of yours in my honorable mentions. I like the Toy Story idea of doing a random Toy Story generator. So I had Robin Hood on my list originally, and then once Stefan sent it in, I took it off and made it a honorable mention. I also had The Candidate, which I mentioned earlier as we were talking about the film, the Robert Redford political thriller. And then I also have Mr. Smith Goes to Washington as a honorable mention. And my final honorable mention was Deadwood, the movie, because that movie centers around the sheriff played by Timothy Oliphant's character returning to Deadwood. And there's an election and a standoff. And if you've never seen Deadwood, go watch Deadwood, then watch Deadwood, the movie. But
I've heard Deadwood's good. I just have so many TV shows on my list to watch.
No, I love Deadwood so much. But don't watch Deadwood, the movie, without having seen the TV show, or you'll be very confused. So those are my honorable mentions. What about you? What do you have?
I don't have any. No. Philadelphia Story was the only one that was claimed. I struggled with connections on this one for a
while. I love Philadelphia Story so much. It's based on a stage play. It's a classic. It's very, very good. Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of different ways that we can go. We have lots of older movies. We have some more modern movies. We have, Molly's naming convention. Why don't you read off what we have real quick?
Yeah.
And we'll pick our final four.
All right. So we have The Quiet Man, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, The Dirty Dozen, Sergeant Rutledge, The Philadelphia Story, The Quiet Man Again, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington Again, The Man Who Wasn't There, The Man Who Fell to Earth, The Man Who Laughs, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, Disney's Robin Hood, The Longest Day, 310 to Yuma, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, The Man Who Wasn't There Again, Brokeback Mountain, Back to the Future 3, Fort Apache, The Dark Knight, The Shootist, Unforgiven, Meek's Cut Off, Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, How the West Was Won, The Quick and the Dead, Toy Story Random Generator. What do we got?
Well, if we did The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, we would not have to complain about the length of The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance as a title.
Correct.
We would be beating that one. All right, so I will pick first. I will pick from yours. I will go with you said The Shootist was the spiritual sequel, so
correct,
I guess so. Because I'm going to see Unforgiven on my personal ladder. Although, I don't know. No, I'm going to go Unforgiven. I think that thematically it's probably a better connection just based on what I know about Unforgiven.
Unforgiven.
Well, I will pick from your list as well, and I will take the only one on your list that I have not seen is How the West Was Won, so I will take that.
I can't believe you didn't do The Quick and the Dead. I was fully expecting that. I'm a little blindsided right now.
It's not that good, but it's very fun.
Okay.
But it's, yeah, I don't really want to do Quick and the Dead. There's not enough there to really do a podcast about, in my opinion. It's a very fun movie, but there's not enough there.
Yeah.
It's all not right. A good podcast.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Well, man, so I'm struggling with the listeners. I mean, not because there aren't good ones, because there's a lot of different ways.
There's very different ways to go with the listeners.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we are a couple that were multiple times. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington was on there twice. Quiet Man was on there twice. Yep. Philadelphia Story was only on there once.
Man Who Wasn't There was on a couple times.
Yeah, I kind of have you seen The Man Who Wasn't There? Do you know anything about it?
Okay.
I sort of want to do that if just to not like get stuck in like older movies, because we've only done older movies so far, which is fine, but like it'd be nice to get a little bit more current, although that's I think from the 90s. And also like I just don't know if I want to keep doing westerns. Like I'm doing a ton of westerns myself, but I know not everybody likes westerns, so I don't want to just like do another western. Although I do think the Philadelphia Story could be fun. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, I think, could be really good, too. Yeah. I will take The Man Who Wasn't There and let you pick the last listener suggestion.
Good. And Who Wasn't There. So I'm really tempted to take The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
I thought you saw that.
I didn't. I want to. I also really want to take Philadelphia Story. Just because I love all three of those lead actors, Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn. Quiet Man is also really tempting, but I've seen it. I want to save that for my own personal watch. I think at this point I'm going to throw in to give Stefan the Bone, and because it was originally on my list, I have to give Stefan the Bone and pick Disney's Robin Hood, and I'm not gonna be mad at it if we did it, because it would be awesome. I would love to do an animated film, and I would love for that animated film to be Disney's Robin Hood. Oodle-olly, oodle-olly, golly, what a day. We haven't done an animated film yet.
We haven't. I kind of don't like any of our final four. I don't really want to do any of these.
Scrap it. We're doing the Philadelphia Story. Fuck it.
No, I mean, I do. I think all four, I think, would be good movies to watch. I don't know why. I'm just, like, not, like, jazzed about watching any of these four. But this is terrible. I'm sure they'll all be fine. Like, I think any of the four, I guess it's the other way of putting that is like, I am not passionate about any of the four. I mean, How the West Was Won, I think, could be very similar to this. I do like Unforgiven, I think Unforgiven actually like probably makes a lot of sense.
I think watching a modern take on a movie like this is a really good idea. But at the same time, Unforgiven is not that modern. I mean, it came out in 1990.
I know.
It's 30 years ago. Yeah. I mean, it seems modern to us because we haven't seen it.
Right.
But yeah, that's still a 30-year-old Western.
Yeah. That's true. Actually, when Unforgiven came out, that is less time between The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance and Unforgiven than Unforgiven.
And it is Unforgiven to now. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Would you be mad then if we went back in time? Replace Robin Hood with the Philadelphia Story and had a lot of fun talking about a rom-com that's based on a play starring three incredible actors.
Have you seen the Philadelphia Story?
I have.
Okay, so it's another blind spot for me.
Correct.
So we've got to do Brendan Blind Spot the following week. or I guess we don't have to, but yeah, I think that could be fun. It's I don't know anything about it. It's actually on my watch list because I pulled a bunch of movies off of like a funniest movies ever list, and that was one of the ones. So James Stewart and a love triangle is that's an easy one to write as the podcast description when I'm writing that up. So sure, yeah, why not do a flashback and
why don't we flashback even further in the life of Jim Stewart?
Yes, exactly.
And it'll give us Cary Grant. I mean, we haven't talked about Cary Grant on this podcast yet, right?
All right. Yep. Philadelphia Story. It is also, we haven't done a rom com. I feel like in a very
we have not done a rom com. And I already have a guest in mind. So.
Oh, you do. Oh, I already have a guest in mind as well. Okay. So we're gonna have to fight for privileges.
We'll fight for it.
Is it somebody from Philadelphia?
It is not.
Oh, well then no. Mine isn't either, actually.
Right.
Well, cool. And then when we come back next week and we don't have a guest, everybody could be like, oh, you guys teased that you're gonna have a guest next week, and we will be like, yeah, we failed.
We got kicked out of the triangle. So yeah. So this week, obviously, I'm the Jimmy Stewart to your John Wayne. It'll be interesting to see if those roles switch next
week. Now, why am I the John Wayne? Just like, I feel like I'm the smarter of the two, which means I should be the Jimmy Stewart.
Sure about that? You're taller.
I'm tall. Like, well, yeah, most people are taller than you. But yeah, I don't know. That's fine. I'll take, I mean, I guess I'll take John Wayne. I'm just not taking his politics with me. That's all.
Yeah, Pilgrim.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was probably very confusing. Well, not really, but yes. So all right. We're not watching Disney's Robin Hood. We're watching A Philadelphia Story. I'm more excited about Philadelphia. I will say I'm more excited about Philadelphia Story than any of the original four.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I think Mr. Smith Goes to Washington could have been fun too.
And here's the thing: if you haven't seen Disney's Robin Hood, go watch it. And it's so much fun.
I think everybody saw it as a kid.
I think everybody's seen Robin Hood at this point, but yeah.
I kind of didn't want that to be the first animated that we do. Like I like that. I don't know why. There's something about it.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right, let's see. Philadelphia Story is on HBO Max, which is now available everywhere. So, or you can rent it, or you can get it from your local library if you don't have HBO Max. And it looks like none of our listeners that I follow, Olin has seen it.
Yeah.
Olin has seen it, and you've seen it in terms of listeners who've logged this one. So the connection is Jimmy Stewart in a love triangle. And it is directed by, oh, man, there's a director connection
already.
And
this is 2 weeks in a row for Olin as well, so.
Oh, my God. Olin, do you want to send another voicemail?
Feel free. Yeah, do it, Olin.
You've earned it with two in a row. All right, we are doing Philadelphia Story next week. Real quick, Brendan, what are you going to watch this week?
A couple of things. So WandaVision has been a lot of fun on Disney Plus. Fourth episode of that obviously will drop on Friday. Those are dropping weekly. That's been a lot of fun. I am about to start season 3 of the Battlestar Galactica remake that started in 2003. That watch has been a lot of fun. This is my first time watching Battlestar Galactica. I have no idea what's happening or what is going to happen. So I've thus far managed to stay spoiler free. I've been spending a lot of time talking to our friend R. Philly and just bouncing Rich Filiberto and bouncing my reactions to the show off of him.
That's
because
Rich.
He's like a safe space that I can do that with, and he won't spoil me.
Nice.
So that's been a lot of fun going back and forth with him about Battlestar Galactica. Really enjoying that. So I'm looking forward to jumping on season 3 of that.
Nice. Yeah, for me, so my personal ladder, I'm still in the Western, so I just watched Stagecoach on my personal ladder, which, again, Stagecoach could have been a great connection from Liberty Valance. That's like a prequel, it feels like, to Liberty Valance. So I think next I'm going to watch Once Upon a Time in the West, I believe, is the next one I have up on my ladder, my personal ladder. But I've also got some James Bond movies from the library that I'm going to watch, because Mac and I finally got together to talk about all of the Timothy Dalton, all two of the Timothy Dalton James Bond movies. So that podcast is up on my other podcast feed, Dial P for Podcast. I've also tweeted it out as well. We already set a date for our Pierce Brosnan podcast. We're going to record it a week from Friday. Brendan, you are on that calendar invite. You can't.
I am. So I guess I need to get caught up on the Brosnan.
You have four Brosnan movies to watch.
To watch in 2 weeks. So I got to hurry up.
Yep. So I'm gonna watch GoldenEye and Tomorrow Never Dies at some Fantastic. Point. Speaking of movies about the media, Tomorrow Never Dies, another one about the media. I'm excited to revisit both of those because I haven't seen either of those in a very long time. So nice. That and Once Upon a Time in the West, and then I have a whole bunch of Westerns still. I think I'm going to be watching Westerns for a few more weeks here on my personal
ladder. Next up on my personal movie ladder after watching Network is going to be The Madness of King George, which I've never seen. The connection being how madness drives someone to do something crazy. So there you go.
Let me tell you what because I watched Network on my personal movie ladder.
Yeah, where'd you go after
very
Network?
Early on. And let's see. So I watched Videodrome and then Network, and then I watched Chinatown after Network.
Oh, well, I've seen Chinatown, so, yeah. You know.
I think the Faye Dunaway connection, I'm pretty Fair sure, enough. Is what I did. So, all right. Well, last week was a long one, and this one I think is an even longer one than last week. But there was a lot to talk about with Manny
Shaw.
There was. I think we've fully figured out who it was that shot Liberty Valance on this podcast.
It was me.
Yeah. So, all right. Next week, we'll be watching Philadelphia Story. From 1940, yes. Starring Jimmy Stewart in a love triangle. It's on HBO Max, and it is about 2 hours long. So that will be fun to watch. All right. Well, let's get out of here, Brendan. So you can follow us at Ladder Movie. Email us, themovieladder@gmail.com, with your feedback and connections to Philadelphia Story. You can follow me. I'm at Brooks ZA on all platforms.
And I am at Fidzy Brendan on all platforms. Follow me
on all
on
platforms,
Twitter and Letterboxd.
Yeah. So, and check out that James Bond podcast. If you're a fan of Timothy Dalton, Mac and I talked for a few hours. It was very fun.
Absolutely.
We'll be back. We'll be back with this podcast before I'm back with another Bond podcast. So.
Yeah, I need to go finish that podcast, actually.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you for a love triangle next week. Philadelphia Story.
Good to me.